The scripture this evening is found in Numbers chapter 20, verses 7 through 13. Numbers chapter 20, verses 7 through 13. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Take the rod, and gather thou the assembly together, thou and Aaron thy brother, and speak ye unto the rock before their eyes. And it shall give forth his water, and thou shalt bring forth to them water out of the rock. So thou shalt give the congregation and their beasts to drink. And Moses took the rod from before the Lord, as he had commanded him. And Moses and Aaron gathered the congregation together before the rock, and he said unto them, Hear now, ye rebels, must we fetch you water out of this rock? And Moses lifted up his hand, and with his rod he smote the rock twice, and water came out abundantly, and the congregation drank, and their beasts also. And the Lord spake unto Moses and Aaron, Because ye believed me not, to sanctify me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore ye shall not bring this congregation into the land which I have given them. This is the water of Meribah, because the children of Israel strove with the Lord, and he was sanctified in them.
These verses we read of a terrible mistake that Moses made. We're introduced to Moses back over in the book of Exodus in the second chapter, as the children of Israel are multiplying so rapidly. The Pharaoh, king of Egypt, orders that the Hebrew midwives take the little boys and kill them when they are born. The Hebrew midwives, of course, do not do that. God commends them, but in verse 22 of chapter 1, it says, And Pharaoh charged all his people, saying, Every son that is born ye shall cast into the river, and every daughter ye shall save alive. We see in these verses that Pharaoh understands that the Hebrews are growing so rapidly that they present a threat unto the Egyptians. In order to slow down the growth of the Hebrews, he orders that the little boys be cast into the river. We note in the second chapter that Moses' mother puts him in a little basket down in the edge of the river and appoints Moses' sister to watch over him. Pharaoh's daughter came down to the river to take a bath, and she saw or heard the little boy weeping. She went over and saw the little boy, and she wanted, as we might say, to take him home with her. But Moses' sister saw and understood that Moses needed somebody to take care of him. So she asked Pharaoh's daughter if it would be appropriate for her to find one of the Hebrews to take care of this little boy. Strangely enough, Moses' own mother was selected to raise Moses. One of the interesting things about that story is that Moses found out who he was. His mother taught him that he was indeed one of the Hebrews. And as we read about Moses, there are a number of fascinating things that exist in Moses' life. Perhaps the Hebrew writer sets forth some of those things that we are to be impressed with as it pertains to Moses' faith in Hebrews, the 11th chapter. Beginning in verse 24, the text tells us, By faith Moses, when he was grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to share ill treatment with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, accounting the reproach of Christ greater riches than all the treasures of Egypt, for he looked unto the recompense of reward. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. We read further in verse 28 and 29 of the faith of Moses as he kept the Passover, the sprinkling of the blood, that the destroyer of the firstborn should not touch them. By faith they passed through the Red Sea as by dry land, which the Egyptians, essaying to do, were swallowed up. We're impressed with the great faith of Moses, and as we read here in the 11th chapter, we see that his refusal to be identified with the royal family of Egypt was very costly to him.
He had available unto him all the treasures that Egypt could offer, the vast education that Egypt could offer. And Moses was willing to forsake all of that and to identify himself with the people of God and to suffer with them. The text of Hebrews 11 tells us that Moses esteemed the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he looked unto the recompense of reward. The faith of Moses caused him to forsake Egypt and to go into the land of Midian, where he served as a shepherd for 40 long years. Then in Exodus, the third chapter, as Moses was keeping the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, we learn in verse 2 that the angel of the Lord appeared unto him in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush burned with fire, and the bush was not consumed. And Moses said, I will turn aside now and see this great sight, why the bush was not consumed. And Moses, God, in verse 4, when God saw that he turned aside to see, God called unto him out of the midst of the bush and said, Moses, Moses. And he said, Here am I. And he said, Draw not nigh hither, put off thy shoes from off thy feet, for the place whereon thou standest is holy ground. Moses then is instructed by God that God has a great work that he wants Moses to do. In verse 10 of this text, God said to Moses, Come now, therefore, and I will send thee unto Pharaoh, that thou mayest bring forth my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. Moses has a great responsibility before God and before these people to lead them up out of the land of captivity where they have been made slaves. But Moses begins to offer excuses unto the Lord. In verse 11, Moses said unto God, Who am I that I should go unto Pharaoh, and that I should bring forth the children of Israel out of Egypt? This seems to express a lack of confidence in Moses to be able to do the thing that God has asked him to do. One of the things we need to learn from this is that God will never ask us to do anything that we're incapable of doing. Moses could do what God instructed him to do. In verse 13, And Moses said unto God, Behold, when I come unto the children of Israel, and shall say unto them, The God of your fathers has sent me unto you. And they shall say unto me, What is his name? What shall I say unto them? And Moses is instructed by God. He said, I am that I am. He said, Thus shalt thou say unto the children of Israel, I am has sent me unto you. God speaks to Moses regarding his eternal nature, that he was, he is today, and that he always will be. You tell them, I am has sent you. But then in chapter 4 and in verse 1, Moses answered and said, But behold, they will not believe me, nor hearken unto my voice. He said, For they will say, Jehovah hath not appeared unto thee. And Jehovah said unto him, What is that in thy hand? And he said, A rod. This rod was used a number of times by the Lord in the hand of Moses to accomplish great things that were impressive to bring the children of Israel up out of the land of Egypt. But Moses then begins to make more excuses. In verse 10, And Moses said unto Jehovah, O Lord, I am not eloquent, neither heretofore nor since thou hast spoken unto thy servant, for I am slow of speech and of a slow tongue. He says to God, God, I just can't talk very good. I can't speak very well. Therefore, I'm not qualified to go. In verse 13, And he said, O Lord, send, I pray thee, by the hand of him whom thou wilt send. Now these verses simply say, Lord, you send anybody, but don't send me. Moses has made all kinds of excuses not to do the thing that God said. When God said unto Moses, I want you to go down into Egypt and bring the children of Israel up out of Egypt. God concludes this conversation with Moses in verse 20. It tells us in chapter 4, in verse 20, that God said unto Moses simply to go. Take the rod of God and go. And so it was that Moses went down into the land of Egypt to do the thing that God asked him to do. In the 5th chapter, Moses and Aaron appear before Pharaoh as we see the greatness of Moses as he appears before the Egyptian king. And he says unto this king, "Let my people go, that they may hold a feast unto me in the wilderness." That's quite a commandment that Moses and Aaron extend before Pharaoh. But yet we see Pharaoh's response in verse 2. "Who is Jehovah that I should hearken unto his voice to let Israel go? I know not Jehovah, and moreover I will not let Israel go." Pharaoh's stubbornness is seen in this passage. But when he asks the question, "Who is the Lord that I should obey his voice?" Pharaoh's about to find out exactly who it is that he's dealing with. In the 7th chapter of the book of Exodus, we mentioned that God had a plan to use the rod that Moses had, which was simply a staff that he used in herding sheep. In chapter 7 and in verses 9 and 10, Pharaoh said, "Or when Pharaoh shall speak unto you," God said, "show a wonder for you, and then thou shalt say unto Aaron, take thy rod and cast it down before Pharaoh, that it become a serpent." We learned that back over here when we read in the 4th chapter, God had asked Moses, "What is that in thy hand?" And this rod of God was used to impress the Egyptians with the power of God and to impress the children of Israel of the might of God to lead the people out of the land of Egypt. In the 8th chapter, if you'll turn to verses 16 and 17, we see that this rod was used to bring forth lice upon the people of Egypt. In the 9th chapter and in verse 23, Moses used the rod of God to bring forth hail upon the people. Locusts in the 10th chapter. And the sea is divided in the 14th chapter as the children of Israel are brought forth up out of the land of Egypt. And they stand before the Red Sea, and the Egyptians ensue behind them. And the people say, "What are we going to do now? Aren't there or weren't there enough graves in Egypt to bury us?" And Moses said in verse 13, "Stand still and see the salvation of Jehovah." It's interesting to note in verse 15 that Jehovah said unto Moses, "Wherefore criest thou unto me? Speak unto the children of Israel that they go forward, and lift thou up thy rod, and stretch it out over the sea, and divide it, and the children of Israel shall go into the midst of the sea on dry ground." Now we know that the children of Israel were able to escape from the hand of the Egyptians. As Pharaoh's army sought to pursue them through the Red Sea, God allowed the waters to collapse. And as God had said, "You shall see the Egyptians no more," all of the Egyptians were consumed in the depth of the Red Sea. Now, interestingly enough, as we read about Moses, we see that not only did he stand before the great Pharaoh of Egypt, but he used the rod of God to accomplish the deliverance of these people. But as he delivered them unto the foot of Mount Sinai, in Exodus chapter 19 and 20, we see that it was through Moses that the law of God was given unto his people. In Exodus chapter 19, beginning in verse 16, "And it came to pass on the third day when it was morning, that there were thunders and lightnings and a thick cloud upon the mount, and the voice of a trumpet exceeding loud. And all the people that were in the camp trembled. And Moses brought forth the people out of the camp to meet God, and they stood at the neither part of the mount. And Mount Sinai, the whole of it, smoked because of Jehovah descended upon it in fire, and the smoke thereof ascended as the smoke of a furnace. And the whole mount quaked greatly." We learn that the people were afraid at this particular instant. And Moses ascended upon the mount, and the commandments were given unto Moses. In chapter 20, in verse 1, "And God spake all these words, saying, I am Jehovah thy God, who brought thee out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Thou shalt not make unto thee a graven image." Verse 7, "Thou shalt not take the name of Jehovah thy God in vain." We're reading of the giving of the Ten Commandments unto Moses on Mount Sinai. Moses was an important man. And as we think of the great accomplishments of Moses, we ought to be impressed with the things that he did. But we also need to see that Moses did not just do great things. Moses messed up. Sometimes we mess up. And we do things that we ought not do. And we say things that we ought not say. And this brings us to the book of Numbers in the 20th chapter, the passage that was read in your hearing a few moments ago. As the children of Israel are brought up out of the land of Egypt, they complain, they murmur, they fuss, they're not satisfied with the leadership of God and the provisions that God has given them. And as we come to Numbers chapter 20, we see that instructions are given unto Moses how that this vast multitude of people and their flocks can be watered. In Numbers chapter 20 and in verse 8, it says, "Take the rod and assemble the congregation, thou and Aaron thy brother, and speak ye unto the rock before their eyes, that it give forth its water, and thou shalt bring forth to them water out of the rock. So shalt thou give the congregation and their cattle drink." And Moses took the rod from before Jehovah as he commanded him. And Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly together before the rock, and he said unto them, let's stop right there. What we see that God told Moses to do was to speak to the rock. But yet we see that Moses spoke to the people. He addressed them. And as he addressed them, he said, "Hear now, ye rebels, shall we bring you forth water out of this rock?" Moses changed what God told him to do. God had not given instruction to Moses to speak to the people, but to speak to the rock, and out of the rock there would come forth water. We note a very slight change in the plan of God as Moses began to implement it, but even a slight change was not what God said. Notice, if you will, that God does not tolerate departure from what He says. In the Hebrew letter, in the 8th chapter, and in verse 5, as Moses was upon this mount, God said unto him in verse 5, Who serve that which is a copy of the shadow of the heavenly things, even as Moses is warned of God when he is about to make the tabernacle? For see, saith he, that thou make all things according to the pattern that was showed thee in the mount. Everything that Moses was to do was to be exactly like God said. That principle hasn't changed. In 2 John verse 9, John writes, "Whosoever goeth onward and abideth not in the teaching of Christ hath not God. He that abideth in the teaching, the same hath both the Father and the Son." God does not grant us liberty to depart from what God said even a little bit. Even though Moses departed from what God said, rather than speaking to the rock, he spoke to the people. We might think, well, that's not very much difference. But it was enough to impose the consequence of God upon him. We'll read about what that was as we get a little further. But in the book of Leviticus, we see again somewhat of a slight departure from what God said as we talk about Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron. Aaron, of course, being appointed as the first high priest among God's people. Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, should have known what God said about offering incense. But in verse 1, it tells us that Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, took each of them his censer and put fire therein and laid incense thereon and offered strange fire before Jehovah, which he had not commanded them. And there came forth fire from before Jehovah and devoured them, and they died before Jehovah. Then Moses said unto Aaron, "This is it that Jehovah spake, saying, I will be sanctified in them that cometh nigh me. And before all the people, I will be glorified." God said, "You're going to do what I said, or there's going to be consequences." And the text tells us that Aaron held his peace. Aaron knew the law of God. And he knew that God's judgment upon these his sons was righteous judgment. We read in 2 Samuel chapter 6 of a man by the name of Uzzah, who taught the nation of Israel a very similar lesson. God had said that only the Levites are to have anything to do with the Ark of the Covenant. Now Uzzah, no doubt, had good intentions. He saw that the oxen who pulled the ark, or pulled the cart upon which the ark was placed, stumbled. And Uzzah simply put up his hand to steady the ark. And God devoured him. He killed him. Right there, on the spot. Because Uzzah, you see, was not a Levite. He had transgressed the restrictions that God had placed upon those who were to have anything to do with the Ark of the Covenant. God is just as particular today. You see, we can't change what God said. God does not grant us the liberty to alter it in any way. In the book of Revelation, we see a similar principle set forth in verses 18 and 19. God said, I testify unto every man that heareth the words of the prophecy of this book. If any man shall add unto them, God shall add unto him the plagues which are written in this book. And if any man shall take away from the words of the book of this prophecy, God shall take away his part from the tree of life and out of the holy city which are written in this book. There are those, and perhaps it is true, that conclude these words are simply talking about the prophecy of the book of Revelation. But the principle is true and stated a number of times throughout Scripture that we're not allowed to add to, we're not allowed to take from anything that God has said. Moses changed God's plan. Peter said in 1 Peter chapter 4, if any man speak, let him speak as the oracles of God. If you're going to teach anything, you only teach what God says. Well, Moses changed what God said. We learn also that Jesus said in Matthew the 7th chapter and in verse 21, not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father which is in heaven. You see, Moses messed up. Jude said we must contend earnestly for the faith. We must be willing to fight for the very things that God has told us to do. Moses compromised that when he changed what God said. You'll also notice in Numbers chapter 20 and in verse 10, it tells us that Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly together before the rock, and he said unto them, hear now, ye rebels, shall we bring you forth water out of this rock? Again, Moses messed up. He claimed for he and Aaron the glory of bringing water unto the children of Israel. Well, the Lord said that that simply won't work. In verse 12, God said unto Moses and Aaron, because ye believe not in me, to sanctify me in the eyes of the children of Israel. Therefore ye shall not bring this assembly into the land which I have given them. There were consequences imposed upon Moses and Aaron because they robbed God of the glory that he should have. Well, that principle hasn't changed either. Sometimes we rob God of his glory by simply refusing to wear the name that he's assigned for us to wear. In Colossians the first chapter and in verse 18, we learn that Christ is the head of the body, the church, who is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, that in all things he might have the preeminence. Christ demands first place in everything that we do. That's why in Acts the 4th chapter and in verse 12, we learn that there is no other name given under heaven by which men must be saved other than the name of Jesus. Beloved, when we wear the name of Christ, we give glory to Him. We understand the importance of the church. And Paul said to the Ephesians in Ephesians chapter 3 and in verse 21 that we glorify Him in the church. But Moses continued to mess up. In Numbers chapter 27, as we turn just a little bit further over, in verse 14 of Numbers chapter 27, the text tells us, because ye rebelled at my word in the wilderness of Zin, in the strife of the congregation to sanctify me in the waters before their eyes. These are the waters of Meribah of Kadesh in the wilderness of Zin. You did not sanctify me. You did not believe in me. God says, you rebelled at my word. Quite a serious accusation of Moses and Aaron. He said in chapter 20 and verse 12, you believed not in me. I want you to think of all the great things that Moses had seen and the great things that Moses had done. Moses had used the rod of God to deliver the children of Israel out of Egypt. He had used the rod of God, a simple tool for a shepherd, to hold it over the Red Sea. And with the power of God, the waters parted and Israel crossed on dry ground. Moses did that. But now we see that God says to Moses and Aaron, because you believed not in me. You didn't believe what I said. Sometimes we rebel. You see, that principle hasn't changed either. When we submit to those things that men desire. In Matthew, the 15th chapter, we learn that the scribes and the Pharisees accused Jesus and His disciples of transgressing the tradition of the elders. And Jesus answered, verse 3, "Why do ye also transgress the commandment of God because of your tradition? And God said," or "for God said, honor thy father and thy mother. And he that speaketh evil of father or mother, let him die the death. But ye say, whosoever shall say to his father or his mother, that wherewith thou mightest have been profited by me is given to God, he shall not honor his father and his mother. And ye have made void the word of God because of your tradition. Ye hypocrites, well did Isaiah prophesy of you, saying, this people honoreth me with their lips, but their heart is far from me, but in vain do they worship me, teaching as their doctrines the precepts of men." Moses and Aaron rebelled against God's commandments. When we prefer our own will, such as these in Matthew, the 15th chapter, over what God has said, aren't we doing the same thing that Moses did? Moses messed up in providing water for the children of Israel. But in Numbers chapter 20, we see that the people were very passionate about those provisions of God, that these were not what they desired. In verse 3 it says, "And the people strove with Moses and spake, saying, would that we had died when our brethren died before Jehovah. And why have ye brought the assembly of Jehovah into this wilderness, that we should die there, we and our beast?" Moses is getting upset with these people. Verse 5, "And wherefore have ye made us to come up out of Egypt to bring us in unto this evil place? It is no place of seed or figs or vines or pomegranates, neither is there any water to drink. All they do is fuss and complain." Now, Moses has about had enough of that. And as we turn in our Old Testament to the book of Psalms, we see this event just referenced very slightly. In Psalms chapter 106, look at verses 32 and 33. Psalms chapter 106, verses 32 and 33. It says, "They angered him also at the waters of Meribah, so that it went ill with Moses for their sakes, because they were rebellious against his spirit, and he spake unadvisedly with his lips." Moses was upset with these people. This passage tells us that he was angry with them. Sometimes we mess up when we allow our anger to proceed. Moses did. Moses acted under the heat of pressure or passion. The passage also tells us in Numbers chapter 20, verse 11, that Moses lifted up his hand and smote the rock with his rod twice, and water came forth abundantly, and the congregation drank and their cattle. Two things we want to notice is that no one had told Moses to strike the rod twice, or strike the rock with his rod twice. What he did was contrary to what God said. Now granted, it got results, but it wasn't what God said. Read on as we learn about Moses in Numbers chapter 20. In verse 12 it says, "And Jehovah said unto Moses and Aaron, because you believe not in me to sanctify me in the eyes of the children of Israel." What Moses did was not some private thing that no one knew about. What Moses did in claiming credit for that which God provided was in the eyes of the children of Israel. Everybody knew that Moses was claiming credit for the things that God did. God not very happy with Moses. We're responsible, you see, for our influence upon others. We're responsible for what we say and do. In the book of the Roman letter, in the 14th chapter, in verses 7 and 8, the Apostle Paul writes, "For none of us live unto himself, and none dieth unto himself. For whether we live unto the Lord. Or whether we die unto the Lord. Whether we live, therefore, or die, we are the Lord's." There's nothing you can really do for which you're not responsible. In this same chapter, in verse 12 it says, "So then each one of us shall give account of himself to God." Was Moses responsible for what he did before all the eyes of the children of Israel? Certainly he was. He was giving the impression to them that he was responsible for something that he was not responsible for. In fact, God was. In Matthew, the 5th chapter, and in verses 13 and 14, Jesus taught the power of our example. He says, "Ye are the salt of the earth, but if the salt have lost its savor, wherewith shall it be salted? It is thenceforth good for nothing but to be cast out and trodden under foot of men. Ye are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a lamp and put it under the bushel, but on the stand, and it shineth unto all that are in the house. Even so let your light shine before men, that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven." We teach our little ones about the song, "This little light of mine, let it shine, let it shine." We understand from that song the importance of our influence in this world. Moses should have seen that. That as he was the leader of the children of Israel, when he claimed credit for providing them water, when in fact God was the one, he did not give sanctification to God and there would be consequences. I want to suggest to you that that really hasn't changed. In Romans the second chapter, and in verse 16, we see that even the things that we do in secret, much less the things that are publicly known, we will be judged for those things in the day when God shall judge the secrets of men, according to my gospel by Jesus Christ. Was Moses responsible before God for judgment in that the sin that he committed was a public thing? Everybody knew about it. You see, public sins are things that must be acknowledged. James tells us in James chapter 5 and verse 16 to confess our sins one to another. Moses was wrong. The only way to correct that was to acknowledge it, but there were consequences to what Moses did. Now I want you to think again of all the great things that Moses did. He had delivered Israel out of the bondage of Egypt. He was responsible for going upon the mountain and facing God and receiving the law and giving that law unto the people. Moses was the mediator and intercessor on behalf of these people between the multitude of Israel and God as he went upon that mountain. We notice that Moses was their great leader who led them not only out of Egypt, but in the land of the wilderness for 40 long years. In the 11th chapter of the book of Hebrews, as we see Moses set forth as an example of faith, we notice in verse 26, that he accounted the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he looked for the recompense of reward. Moses expected that God would bless him for doing the things that are right. But friend, there were consequences for doing the things that were wrong. Again, in Numbers chapter 20 and in verse 12, Jehovah said unto Moses and Aaron, "Because ye believe not in me to sanctify me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore ye shall not bring this assembly into the land which I have given them." There were consequences, Moses, for what you do. In Deuteronomy chapter 34, we see at the end of Moses' life, as he has led the children of Israel for this long time, and comes unto the border of the land of promise. In verse 34, or verses 4 and 5 of chapter 34, Jehovah said unto him, "This is the land which I swear unto Abraham, unto Isaac, and unto Jacob, saying, I will give it unto thy seed. I have caused thee to see it with thine eyes, but thou shalt not go over thither." That's what God said to Moses back over in Numbers chapter 20. You see, there were consequences for what Moses did. Even though we might look and consider that a small thing, one departure in Moses' life, well, perhaps there were others, but this was one that had severe consequences. Moses was not allowed to go into the promised land. He had led the children of Israel for 40 long years. He's privileged to see it, but not allowed to go in. In Romans the 15th chapter and in verse 4, the Apostle Paul writes, "For whatsoever things were written aforetime were written for our learning, that through patience and through comfort of the Scriptures we might have hope." What do we learn about Moses? Well, number one, we learn that we must listen when God speaks. In 1 Corinthians the 10th chapter, in verses 10 through verse 12, we see that God has cited a host of sins that the children of Israel have committed during this time of wilderness wandering. And in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and in verse 12, the Lord said, "Wherefore let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall." These lessons that we learn even from Moses It doesn't matter how great he was. It doesn't really matter how great things he did. Moses messed up, and there were consequences to his sin. He could not go into the promised land. Another thing that we need to learn is not everyone that professes to be a believer is pleasing before God. If you'll notice again in Numbers chapter 20, God tells Moses and Aaron, "Because you believed not in me." Would anybody sit and point a finger at Moses and Aaron and accuse them of being unbelievers? God did. God did. Because in this instance, they were not believers. They did not believe what God said. In Matthew, the 7th chapter, a very interesting note in verse 21, as we noticed a moment ago. "Not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father who is in heaven. Many will say unto me in that day, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy by thy name? And by thy name cast out demons, and by thy name do many mighty works. And then will I profess unto them, I never knew you. Depart from me, ye that work iniquity." The word iniquity simply means without law, without authority. Here were some who were doing things they thought manifested their faith in God. But it didn't. Their works were works of lawlessness. Not everyone who professes to be a believer is doing the things or are doing the things that God would have them to do. Now the question that we want to ask just here is, how will it be with you at the judgment? Here is Moses, a great character of faith, cited in the Hebrew letter. We read of the great things that he did. Now, I'm not suggesting to you that Moses didn't go to heaven. We read in Matthew, the 17th chapter, in the first 5 verses, that when Jesus was transfigured on the mount, Moses and Elijah appeared with Jesus, indicating that in the final analysis, Moses was approved, indicating that Moses was forgiven of his sin. But friend and brother, there were still consequences, even though Moses' sin was forgiven. We see that principle repeated time and time again throughout the Old Testament. But we're calling attention to it here in the case of Moses. There are many lessons to be gleaned as we study about Moses. You've listened very patiently to our study. There are those of you in the audience tonight who are in the younger people's Bible classes. And I know that you're studying about Moses. There are many lessons to be learned from Moses. We learn about Moses in his beginning, in his birth. We learn about Moses' wise decision to identify himself with God's people. We learn about Moses suffering with God's people. We learn about Moses as a shepherd in the wilderness. We learn about Moses as the great lawgiver and the leader and deliverer of God's people. But let us focus for just a moment on the fact that Moses messed up. And there were consequences pronounced upon Moses. You see, it doesn't matter how great you are. There are consequences to sin that we commit. Again, you've listened patiently to our study. Maybe something has been encouraging or motivating to you to obey the Lord this evening. If you're in the audience and you're not a Christian, you need to do something about that, because indeed there are consequences to your sin. It'll keep you out of heaven, just as surely as Moses' sin kept him out of the promised land. You don't want that. Jesus came and provided an adequate sacrifice so that consequence doesn't have to be imposed upon you. You can escape that through the forgiveness of your sin. But you must believe that He's the Christ. You must be willing to turn from your sin in repentance. God has promised to save no one who continues in the practice of sin. You must be willing to confess your faith, to be baptized into Christ, to benefit from His shed blood. Perhaps you've done that, and you've not lived faithfully unto God. Nobody on earth knows that any better than you do. No one on earth knows the corrections that you need to make any better than you do. But if your conscience plagues you tonight to motivate you to do something about that, now is the time. We'd be happy to pray with you and for you, or help you in any way to obey the Lord. Make it known as we stand together and sing this song.
Who keep His commandments, they shall
see the hands of those who wish to partake of the Lord's Supper.